Hello, I'm Carol.
And I'm Susan. Welcome to Kickapoo Dark Skies, a news magazine where we'll explore our world after sunset, from the stars and planets above to fireflies, frogs, bats, insects and birds, and not least, humans too, and how we all benefit from darkness at night. We'll explore the importance of dark nights and dark skies, and how we are all made to live in a world that is dark half of every day.
We'll have news on how you can have effective, efficient, affordable lighting that also helps all the birds, bugs, and critters who, like us, need dark skies for health and well-being.
And we'll be talking with people from around Wisconsin and other places who are working to keep our night skies dark while giving us good lighting to live by, as well as experts in the field of biology, medicine, astronomy, and other areas who will help us understand the science of how dark skies are as essential to our world as daylight.
Today's program is sponsored by barred owls, the big birds who give a hoot about dark skies. Barred owls have lived for countless generations in some of the darkest night skies in the Midwest. Their lives depend on being able to fly and find their food in the dark. Now, a personal message from Barry Barred Owl.
I'm Barry Barred Owl, and I'm here to say, who wants to join us tonight? We're flying along the Kickapoo River to find field mice for dinner. It's nice and dark there, and our eyes can see very good. You know, when we try to hunt near town, those bright lights shine in our eyes and make it tough to see the tiny mice. Sometimes we go hungry, and that's hard on our chicks. They sure eat a lot of mice. When you're done listening to Kickapoo Dark Skies, come on out and visit us after dark. Oh, hey, that's my wife. She's taking off. I gotta go.
Kickapoo Nightlife is sponsored by 2200 Kelvin LED light bulbs, the bulb preferred by astronomers and biologists worldwide. 2200 Kelvin LED bulbs. Put one in your yard today.
Well, Carol, we have a question for our listeners. Let's see what they know about smart lighting. What's today's question?
Well, Susan, today's question is, what is a Kelvin? That's spelled K-E-L-V-I-N. Again, today's question is, what is a Kelvin? Hint, it's not a name. Stay tuned. We'll give you the answer at the end of the program.
It's time for our December Nightlife calendar of events, brought to you by Barred Owls. December nights are busy. Wednesday, December 4th, the Kickapoo Dark Sky Initiative Group monthly meeting will be held at 6:30 p.m. This is a Zoom meeting. If interested in attending the meeting, contact Scott at redshiftelectric@gmail.com. December 14th and 15th, the Geminid meteor shower peaks. Earth is moving through the dusty trail of an old comet or asteroid whose particles scatter into our atmosphere as shooting stars. This is often one of the best meteor showers. Over 100 shooting stars an hour can sometimes be seen. December 15th, the full moon rises at 4:29 p.m. This is the cold moon. This is historically when winter really begins to settle in with prolonged cold temperatures in our area. December 20th, Dark Sky Wisconsin holds its monthly meeting at 7 p.m. on Zoom. This meeting is open to the public. If you'd like to attend, go to www.starryskiesnorth.org for the link to access the meeting. December 21st is the winter solstice. This is the shortest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere and the longest day in the Southern Hemisphere. December 22nd and 23rd, the Ursid meteor shower occurs. Named because it seems to come from the constellation Ursa Minor, it has fewer shooting stars to see, but if you're out at night, maybe you'll see more than one. If the sky is clear on any December night, look for bright stars Sirius, Capella, Rigel, Aldebaran, and giant red Betelgeuse near or in the constellation Orion. Check online for a sky chart for December to locate stars and constellations. The winter stars shine in different colors and they're quite bright, making a good show early in the evenings.
The phenology notes for December are as follows. Winter birds are attracted to bird feeders. Flying squirrels may also frequent bird feeders at night. Sandhill cranes have migrated south for the winter. Watch for the first snowfall. Along streams, river otters search river bottoms for winter-chilled frogs, crayfish, and carp. Ruffed grouse are pecking through the snow to find food. Luna moths are tucked away in their cocoons, hidden in leaf litter. White-tailed deer bucks shed their antlers. Chickadees can be seen perched on branches, fluffing up to keep warm. Listen for their calls. Nearly all raccoons are now asleep in sheltered dens, where they will probably stay for at least 2 months. Other animals going into hibernation include bears, woodchucks, ground squirrels, bats, turtles, snakes, lizards, frogs, and toads, as well as countless insects, ticks, and spiders. If there is snow on the ground, a winter night can be magical. Light reflected by the snow is luminescent, with ice crystals twinkling like diamonds. Enjoy a night walk in the woods. Remember the Christmas bird count, December 14th through January 5th. The information collected is used to track changes in winter bird species and numbers, and over time can help guide conservation actions.
Thanks, Carol. Carol, we have a question from Kay, a listener from Madison. Let's see what she's interested in. She writes, Susan and Carol, I've heard you were doing a show on radio station WDRT in Viroqua about dark skies. I'm excited to listen to your show. Well, that sounds good to me.
Yeah.
I have heard about dark sky parks, but I'm confused about what and where they are. Could you provide information about these parks?
Excellent question, Kay. The International Dark Sky Association has a program that certifies communities, parks, and protected areas around the world as dark sky places, which preserve and protect dark sky sites through responsible lighting policies and public education. The International Dark Sky Association has certified more than 200 dark sky places since it named Flagstaff, Arizona, as the first dark sky city in 2001. there are now over 160,000 square kilometers of protected land and night skies in 22 countries on 6 continents, and the list continues to grow.
Wisconsin has just one park currently recognized by the association, Newport State Park, at the tip of Door County, which has held the designation for 5 years.
There are 5 more dark places located close to Wisconsin: Headlands County Park, Mackinac, Michigan; Keweenaw Mountain Lodge, a historic wilderness resort near Copper Harbor, Michigan; Dr. T.K. Lawless County Park in Michigan; Paulos Preserves, Southwest Cook County, Illinois, and is designated as an urban night sky place. These are areas which are certified as dark sky places, but that doesn't mean they're the only places to go for viewing the night sky. In fact, the Kickapoo Valley Reserve, Wildcat Mountain State Park, and the Tunnelville Cliffs State Natural Area are great sites for viewing.
Thanks, Carol. That's our calendar for this month. And now, a word about our sponsors, the Barred Owls.
All year long, barred owls call to us at night asking who is cooking for all of us. What kindness to be concerned for our well-being and asking for nothing in return. Next time you hear a barred owl, take a moment to call out to her and ask, "Who cooks for you all?" It's the least we can do. Thank you, Barred Owl, for being our sponsor.
You are listening to WDRT 91.9, Viroqua, Wisconsin. In future programs, we'll bring you interviews with people from around the state and region who are informed about and working with dark sky conservation, improving lighting quality, and reducing light pollution, as well as talking about how animals, birds, and bugs see and travel and hunt for food in the dark. And of course, we'll add a bit of astronomy too.
Today, we're going to tell you about ourselves and what brought us to creating this program. We are excited about the possibilities of connecting with our friends and neighbors, as well as local businesses throughout working with WDRT Radio here in Viroqua.
And we're looking forward to learning together about good lighting that is effective, efficient, and affordable, as well as simple ways to reduce light pollution and light trespass. We'll bring you information on how our health is regulated by the light and darkness of natural day and night cycles and what disrupting those natural cycles does to our health.
We'll let you know what's interesting each month in our forest, fields, sky, after dark. And if anyone has more information about how birds, animals, plants, and other life adapt to and use the night, we'd love to talk with you. But now, Susan, let's talk about how we came to be interested in dark skies and be here on WDRT talking about good lights and dark nights.
Well, Carol, you've come to this area fairly recently, and so I'll start by asking you, you're the first person I've known that was drawn here primarily by our dark skies. What brought you here?
What brought us here? Well, Susan, my husband and I enjoy outdoor activities and over years traveled to the Driftless region for recreation. We have camped in many places, including Wildcat Mountain State Park, which is known for its beautiful night sky and a great place for stargazing. Looking at the stars from that wonderful park gave us such a feeling of calm and serenity that when we retired, we decided to move here. It was the night sky that sold us on this place we now call home.
Why did you choose this area for dark skies, though? There are other places that are fairly dark at night, such as northern Wisconsin, that would still be in your home territory.
Well, where we previously lived, which was in an urban area, we saw a few stars because of light pollution. It was becoming so bad that I recall having difficulty clearly seeing the moon. There were so many lights that people could drive without turning their car's headlights because it was so bright. Many people find bright sky lights exciting, but I find them agitating and annoying. We did not want to live that way in a place where to sleep you need to have blackout curtains on the windows and white noise machine to drown out the traffic noise. We really could have moved to northern Wisconsin or the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, where there are great night skies, and it is certainly easier to see the aurora borealis. But it is much colder there, and it receives substantially more snow. So we decided to be snowbirds and move to southwest Wisconsin, where it is warmer and the winter is less severe. Living in a community that values the environment and seeks to see the stars is important to us, and we are so happy to be here.
How are you getting involved with dark sky conservation work?
That's an emotional question. My parents were environmentally aware people. When riding with them in the car, they would stop along the way to observe an eagle flying, a deer in the field, or even a skunk along the road. As a family, we would watch Carl Sagan on TV, and on a summer night, we'd try to identify the constellations. A memory I have, which I can vividly recall, is from when I was a little girl, maybe about age 4, traveling home at night in the back seat of the car after spending the day with my grandmother, who lived in another town. Dad pulled the car into the driveway. It was late and way past my bedtime. He gently picked me up from the back seat to carry me into the house. I remember looking up at the stars. They seemed so big and bright, and in my dad's arms, I felt so warm and loved. It is a memory I can walk back into whenever I look at the night sky. The starry sky is important to me because it connects me to the past and grounds me in today. Susan, you may not recall this, but it was through you that I renewed my interest in dark sky science. Remember that night walk at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve you led last spring? We began talking about how we were losing the dark sky because of increasing light pollution, which frankly frightened me because it was the night sky that brought us here to the Kickapoo Valley. You provided ideas and suggestions as how I could connect with others and become involved in helping to inform people about the importance of changing their outdoor lighting to be star-friendly. Over the months, we have generated a lot of creative ideas, including this program. In fact, together, you and I, along with Scott and Marla Lind, have worked to establish the Kickapoo Valley Dark Sky Initiative, whose purpose is to protect the night sky, earth, and all living life forms from light pollution. We are working together, gaining certification as a dark sky place for the Kickapoo Valley. It is a nonprofit organization, and there are no dues. Anyone with an interest in the night sky and the environment can join us. Wouldn't it be great to be named a dark sky place by the International Dark Sky Association? Now, that would be an accomplishment. Susan, I have to tell you that I am proud of our work and feel very good about our efforts to help our community, and truly have enjoyed working with you.
Well, thank you, Carol. It's been fun and really interesting for me, too. Do you have a favorite place or activity that you found here in the Kickapoo Valley?
We really like to hike and have found the Kickapoo Valley Reserve the place we tend to go to when we want to explore. We are getting to know the reserve, but find that it is such a dynamic area that it is always changing and providing new experiences and things to see. We've learned to always pack some muck boots, especially last June. With all the rain, we really needed them. But the hiking challenges are worth it because we see some really cool things which make the effort worth it. Okay, Susan, that's enough about me. How about you? You've lived in the Kickapoo Valley area for quite a while. How did you become interested in dark skies?
Well, I think it's been a lifelong thing. It's been since I was old enough to stand up and walk around, probably. Some of my earliest memories are of laying in the long grass in the field behind our house to watch the stars before going to bed. I grew up along the Wisconsin River near Spring Green, and there were many fallow fields and areas of prairie with lots of open sky. The sky was a lot clearer than it is now. Watching stars and the moon was something we all did, at least casually. We didn't watch TV, and we spent a lot of time outside. So staying out after dark to see the sunset and the moon rise and the stars come out was something we did all year long, and I never got tired of doing that.
Isn't that something about childhood memories that we carry with us today? Oh, sounds beautiful. What are some of your experiences you could share about your night sky adventures?
Well, when I was young, I always had a pony or a horse, and riding my horse at night has been a lifelong love. There's something about riding at night that just really spoke to me, and as a child, my pony and I wandered anywhere that we went during the day. And as I got older, my horse was my companion. We had a lot of territory to play in, as it was over a mile between home and the Wisconsin River, and the land was open enough we could go about 8 miles west towards Spring Green. It was great fun to run through the forest in the dark, and nothing compares to running with your horse through the snowy fields on a moonlit winter night. The stars were so bright that we cast star shadows on the snow as we ran. In more recent years, I participated in bat surveys with Ben Johnston in the Kickapoo Valley Reserve. Sometimes we'd go out on a river or a local lake to check the bat populations near water. And one night on Dutch Hollow Lake, we had a memorable experience. We were paddling around the lake, and then we paddled into the middle of the lake. The stars were so bright and clear. They reflected perfectly in this still, black lake water. And we paddled in the center of the lake, and it seemed that we floated inside a black globe filled with silver stars that surrounded us. They were above us in the sky and all around us, below us in the water. We couldn't tell the difference between the sky filled with stars and the water filled with stars. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
Wow. As a naturalist, Susan, you are well known in the region as an advocate and a community educator. You have been in leadership roles and have been highly influential in many environmental projects. What can you tell us about your efforts to make valuable contributions to the community?
Well, I don't really know how things always turn out when I'm working on them, but I try to pay attention to what I love. And I love having my feet on the ground in the hills and fields of my homeland. Over time, the land and the creatures that live here need our care and attention, and I tend to find something to do almost everywhere. So many years ago, John Heasley began leading astronomy nights at the Kickapoo Valley Reserve, and I soon joined him. We led stargazing nights and walks all year round. And we did this for many years. That led to my realizing that many people now have forgotten about the night and never are in natural night. And they even have become afraid to walk in the fields and woods after dark. So I began doing night walks that offered a chance to see stars. But I also spend time with anyone who has questions or concerns, giving them ideas and skills to explore the night safely. With a plan on how to approach what they are afraid of, people become curious and then can learn. It's been a lot of fun for everyone when we share learning about the other half of our days, the natural dark night. And since we found out light pollution has increased here so much, we no longer qualify for dark sky park designation, and that happened very quickly, I'll add. I've incorporated working for good lights and dark nights, as I like to say. Through the Kickapoo Dark Sky Initiative, I'm helping to get the word out on smart lighting and developing ways we can all learn about light pollution, health, and the ways naturally dark skies at night are good for all of us. This radio program is one project, and in collaboration with others, we're making presentations and developing ways for anyone to access accurate information about lighting. And we're offering opportunities for people to renew their connection with the world around them during the half of life that is after dark. There's a lot to do, but it's worth it. To not see the night sky or be able to know a naturally dark night is an incalculable loss, and it's already occurred in parts of the world and has begun to affect us. In a way, it's a good problem to take on, because unlike many problems today, this one has a simple, available, and mostly easy solution. I think it's great fun to work on a problem and then realize it's solved to everyone's benefit.
Go science. Go Susan. Do you have a favorite place or activity that you enjoy?
Well, for many years, it's been simply the old 131 trail through the middle of the Kickapoo Valley Reserve. That old road has everything: water, woods, fields, marshes, and a lot of areas where there's a wide sky. It's a great place to watch sunsets and moonrises. It's accessible to everyone, easy to walk, and easy to access from three locations.
Love the KVR. Susan, it sounds like we are on the same page when it comes to the important role nature plays in our lives.
Yep, and we're surrounded by people living here who share our love of the outdoors. Well, folks, that's what we're up to. But in the months to follow, we'll interview guests who will help us learn about topics related to dark skies, smart lighting, health and light, astronomy, and more.
And now, a public service announcement. I remember when my parents would be regularly reminding me and my sisters to turn off the lights when you leave the room. We're not using them. Gosh darn it, you can start paying the electric bill. Well, now that I am paying the electric bill and am very concerned about the environment and global warming, I would like to thank Mom and Dad for that valuable reminder and advice. Remember, the more energy you use, the more energy that needs to be made, and the greater the demand placed on the environment. So turn off the lights and other appliances when you're not using them. It's time for the answer to today's quiz question. What is a Kelvin? The Kelvin is a scale represented by the letter K. It is a unit of measurement used to describe the color temperature of light sources. It quantifies the color of light emitted by a source, ranging from warm reddish hues to cool bluish hues on a scale from 1,000 to 10,000 degrees Kelvin. Kelvin temperatures for lighting applications in commercial and residential settings typically range from 2,000 Kelvin warm colored lights to 6,500 blue colored light. Understanding the Kelvin scale is important to understanding LED color temperature ratings when choosing the best light for your needs.
Carol, it sounds like our Bard Owl friends are enjoying their night flights. It's about time we took off, too.
Yes, time flies, doesn't it? Remember, choose your outdoor lights carefully. Dark skies are important. to the health of owls and people too.
I'm Susan.
And I'm Carol. Thanks for joining us.
Remember, turn off your lights, go outside, and look at the stars.